Well, coming up next, time to check in with our regular arts correspondent, Katrina Strickland, who sampled firsthand some of the spectacle and the sounds of Verdi Down Under. I'd like you to hear them as well. Glorious sounds of Emma Matthews as Violetta in La Traviata, as played out across the equally gorgeous vista of Sydney Harbour. It does sound a little bit different to being in one of the houses that we're used to, but apparently a fabulous way to experience it. I haven't yet, but what better way to kick off our regular Arts Roundup segment with Katrina Strickland than with this risky Opera Australia production that certainly seems to have paid off so far anyway. Katrina Rivers is, of course, the arts editor with the Australian Financial Review, and she joins me this Easter Saturday morning from Melbourne. Welcome back to Saturday Extra.
Thanks, Geraldine. Good morning.
Now, I assume, or from what I read, this whole Opera on the Harbour is a very risky business financially, and especially if you consider the recent bad weather that Sydney's been experiencing. But the production does seem to have paid off very well, Katrina, in terms of word of mouth. But will it pay its way by season's end? What's the current verdict?
Well, that is the big question. It's the brainchild of the Artistic Director of Opera Australia, Lyndon Terracini, who really wanted to... One of his hallmarks of his tenure is that he wants to take opera to the mainstream and not make it just an elite thing. And this whole idea is to put it on the harbour, on a stage, which people will save up money for and come to and buy a ticket and feel like they've seen a spectacle, almost like the Sydney Olympics opening ceremony, that kind of thing, rather than, you know, an opera in a standard theatre. They've got a really big budget, $11.5 million for the whole production, of which $6 million is coming from the box office. At this stage, they're at about $5.5 million. So they're pretty close, but, you know, like it all depends on, they finish on April 15, and if there's a few rainy days in there, it could go either way. So they're on track to meet budget, which will be fantastic because then the whole thing will break even and hopefully we'll get it every year. But it's such a thing, this kind of show, to break even is the big aim, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know his plan, you know, having heard him be interviewed on Fran Kelly and others to do this every year. I can see Carmen. I don't know whether they've announced what they, but you can just see Carmen.
I think they have announced that for next year,
have
actually.
They? Yeah, I bet they have. That was my first thought. But of course, the whole idea of this big spectacle event, and friends of mine who've gone have absolutely raved, even people who sort of thought, oh, look, it'll be fabulous to feel being there, but will the music be good? From what I read, the music is very well done too.
That's right. The orchestra, it's a 40-piece orchestra which is contained underneath the stage in an enclosed space. And then the music is piped from there out through speakers to the, you know, people who are sitting on an outdoor seating rake. And yes, I mean, it might not be for a real aficionado the same as their CD or, you know, what they would hear in the acoustically challenged opera house theatre, but it's pretty good. The singers are mic'd. The sound on opening night when I went was really stunning. Emma Matthews, as you say, is a star, and she is a big part of why it's pulled off. But the sound was going to be a big test. You know, it could have been a fantastic spectacle, and if the sound was no good, it would have been considered a flop, but they really pulled the two together. And the spectacle, Francesca Zambello, the director, has really used the setting with the opera house and the harbour bridge behind and the skyline as part of the production. She's got fireworks in a party scene coming from behind the stage and the cast arriving at one point on water taxis with little fairy lights on them. And, you know, some of the cast are silhouetted. They stand at the back of the stage silhouetted against the city. So she's really used the whole vista that you're looking at as part of it. And I think that's a big part of why it's really worked.
We're all participating in a big experiment. Let's move to Melbourne now, and there's still plenty of time to catch what you've described as a beautiful poetic exhibition of work by the South African artist William Kentridge.
Yes, this is on at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image in Federation Square, and it's really done justice to William Kentridge, who is probably South Africa's most renowned artist. He's in his mid-50s. He grew up in the apartheid era with two anti-apartheid lawyer parents. He deals with apartheid and with issues of racism and issues of South Africa, but in a very non-didactic kind of way. He does charcoal drawings and charcoal animations where he erases some of the drawings out and then you see them coming back. And there's just a really beautiful gentleness to his work that I think people will really enjoy.
And you'd like to remind the audience about the wonderful Fred Williams retrospective, which I do think we mentioned last year when it was in Canberra, which I was totally knocked out by. It's moved to Melbourne now as well.
Yes, that's right. It's open at the National Gallery of Victoria, where it runs until the end of July, and then it goes to South Australia from August till November. It's a beautiful retrospective. There was the one at the National Gallery of Australia 25 years ago, not long after Fred Williams died, and this is the next big look at his work since then. Obviously, a lot has happened in Australian art in that time, but Fred Williams really does stand up to the test of time. It's almost a cliche now. People say that, you know, Fred Williams, you look out the window of an aeroplane and you look at the landscape and you think of Fred Williams, but it's true. He has made us look at our landscape differently.
And heading out of the big cities, and the always popular Byron Bay Blues Festival is on again this Easter weekend.
Yes, that's always popular. It's got a big lineup of stars. Cold Chisel launched it on Thursday night with their new album. They've got John Fogerty, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Lucinda Williams and a whole lot of other artists. And that always sells out and gets great tickets. So that should be...
Get up there, but don't take part in the violence. It's apparently one of the most violent parts of Australia already. And look, finally, for Queensland listeners and those visiting Brisbane in coming weeks, a treat's in store at the Queensland Art Gallery, for which I have received one of the most beautiful invitations, I've got to say, that I've ever received for contemporary Australia women, modern woman daughters and lovers.
That's right, and that's a companion to the Modern Women show that's drawings from the Musée d'Orsay in Paris. And the other show, I think the one that you're mentioning, is contemporary Australian women artists. Tony Elwood, the director of the Queensland Art Gallery, is very good at pairing shows in this way. So he's got the 100 drawings or so of women by late 19th and early 20th century artists from Europe, like Degas, Renoir, Toulouse-Lautrec, Rodin, and then he's got the contemporary Australian women's take on art. So that's a nice contrast.
Yeah, it's a stunning invitation. So lots on for people to get out of their homes this weekend and in the weeks to come. Katrina, lovely to talk to you again.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Katrina Strickland, and she's arts editor with the Australian Financial Review.